And I guess you can think of the first part of the talk as providing some motivation for considering homogeneous self-dual systems in the first place. Because although a lot of the stuff I'm going to talk about is very mathematical, and I think the mathematics is very beautiful, and I tend to get carried away with it, I'm also very much of the belief that we should be looking for operational motivations for the structures we're studying and the principles we're exploring. And I tend to be of the belief that thinking about deep information processing properties or properties of information tends to lead to beautiful or deep mathematical concepts, and vice versa. So you can also follow the mathematics, and you'll often discover some interesting operational property that maybe you hadn't even thought of before, or possibility you hadn't thought of before. I guess I'll begin by summarizing some results of earlier papers. Now, perhaps I'll skip through this. I'll just say that some of this work is along the lines of various things that distinguish classical from non-classical systems in this framework. But it's particularly interesting once you've done that to think about how do you distinguish quantum theory and similar theories from the broad range of non-classical theories that are available. Some things we've done along the latter line include exploring bit commitment, showing that basically you can do BB84 style bit commitment in any of these theories if you're guaranteed not to have entanglement. Not too surprising, really, but it has good asymptotic security properties. We've explored teleportation. That's in a paper with Alex Wills, John Barrett, Matt Liefer that you can look up on. Is there a pointer, by the way? Just pointing to the screen isn't really going to do it. This front bit. Okay, excellent. So necessary conditions for conclusive teleportation, where it doesn't have to happen all the time, but you have to know when it succeeds. Even some interesting sufficient conditions for deterministic teleportation. This work on teleportation is also, it tends to point in the direction of homogeneity and self-duality, but I'm not really going to say anything about it today. There's a paper with Cosman and Joe Emerson that formulates Raphael Sorkin's notion of orders of interference in this convex operational framework, where kth order interference is manifest in a k-slit experiment, and quantum mechanics has no interference of order higher than 2. There's also, hopefully, Kaz and I will do some work on a general paper that's pretty much already written for arbitrary k. Rather than the k equals 3, you can find in Foundations of Physics. And I should also point out a paper with a bunch of people, including Matt and Rob and Alex, John, that's in New Journal of Physics, on entropy, entropic properties, and some relationship to information causality that I think relates to a session tomorrow or a couple days from now. All right, so let's go ahead. I'm not going to say too much about these models because I think you've heard already a lot about them. My formalism is going to be pretty similar to Alex. The kinematical model, the state space and measurements you can make, you've got a cone of unnormalized states, and then you have a subcone of the dual cone, and that's the unnormalized effects. And then you have this base omega for the primal cone, and that's the normalized states, and you pick it out by having this unit effect, the stuff that evaluates, where this evaluates to 1, the stuff in the primal cone where this functional evaluates to 1, that's the normalized states. And we're going to say a model is maximal or saturated, and this is a concept I've seen in several talks already, basically, if the cone of allowed effects is actually equal to the full dual cone, so the sort of the mathematically allowed effects, everything that's positive on the primal cone. And of course, the normalized, so this induces an ordering on this linear space, and I'll talk about ordered linear spaces a lot. It's not too complicated. X is bigger than Y if there are differences in the cone. And you can add add inequalities, multiply them by positive scalars, all that nice stuff. So an interval between 0 and this unit in that ordering in the dual cone, that's the normalized effect. So then you have a bunch of effects that add up to the unit. That's a measurement. The probability is led to 1. Okay. A dynamical model, if you want to add dynamics, you just have a semi-group, only one, of positive maps. That's a subcone of the cone of positive maps. And positive just means it takes the cone into the cone. All right. And then if you want, you can have a category of such models. And now you have, that means you have a Hom set from any object to any other object, one system to another system. And again, these processes have to be positive maps. They have to be in the cone of positive maps from A to B. And if you want to get all technical, you can formulate it as a category enriched over ordered linear spaces, which basically just means the Hom sets, the processes from one object to another, are ordered linear spaces. Okay, the cutest formulation is actually to have the primal cone be the Hom set from the real numbers to A. A is basically just a label here, and then the effect cone is just going back to real numbers. I mean, effects give you probabilities. And of course, you order the real numbers by their natural positive cone. And then all these conditions about stuff being positive pretty much just follows from saying every process from the reals to the reals has to be positive. In other words, you want probabilities if you take account of normalization. So, of course, only some of these dynamics are physical. They're the ones that, take normalized states to subnormalized states, because they could be associated with a measurement outcome. And, if they make it below normalized, well, that's the probability of the measurement outcome. Okay, that's basically that picture. By the way, if there's anything that's, egregiously undefined in the talk, please stop me and ask me to define it. I'm going to try not to be too technical. Okay, Alex has already talked about self-duality. Given an inner product, you can define an internal representation of the dual cone as, all the stuff that's positive, whose inner product with the primal cone is positive. That's just an internal representation. And it's far from unique, because you change the inner product and it goes somewhere different. But the operational implications are the same. Okay, if you can introduce an inner product such that it makes the effects exactly the same cone as the states, that's called self-dual. Okay, and then there's a theorem. Okay, so that's self-duality. Alex talked about homogeneity. That means that the automorphism group of the cone, and that's the group of positive maps that actually take the cone onto itself, right? Not just into it, but onto itself. So they preserve all the structure of the cone. Extremal rays go to extremal rays. Pure states go to maybe subnormalized or supernormalized pure states. Right, pure states being extremal elements of this base, right, of normalized states. Okay, so those are the automorphisms. They form a group. And of course, a subgroup of this automorphism group is the base-preserving automorphisms, or automorphisms that preserve the normalized states. We've heard a lot about that. Those are the reversible transformations in most people's language. And so that's a compact subgroup, in fact, a maximal compact subgroup of the automorphism group, which is a Lie group, but not compact, obviously, because you can multiply things by arbitrary positive scalars, but even aside from that, it's non-compact in a more complex way. Okay. So I introduced the automorphism group to talk about what it is for a state space to be homogeneous, and that's if you can take any interior point of this cone of unnormalized states to any other point by choosing a suitable element of the automorphism group to do it. So transitivity on the interior. Okay. If you have a self-dual, and let's say in finite dimensions, doubly finite dimensions, a homogeneous self-dual state space, then it basically is the cone of squares in a so-called Euclidean or formally real Jordan algebra. And vice versa is relatively easy to see. Okay, so that's Kosher and Weinberg's theorem. And by an earlier result of Jordan, von Neumann, and Wigner, those cones of squares can be classified, and they are just the set of density operators on an n-dimensional Hilbert space. Okay, this is actually incomplete. One way to interpret this, let's allow quaternionic Hilbert spaces and real Hilbert spaces, and then this is true. So the density operators are the self-adjoint, where that notion extends naturally to quaternions and to quaternionic matrices, and obviously real matrices, just symmetric. And then you want them to be positive, semi-definite, in appropriate sense. So there's sort of real quaternionic and complex quantum theory, balls, which we've heard a lot about. This is, of course, a cone generated by a ball. So it's a Lorentz cone. The normalized states are a ball. Or the positive 3x3 matrices, scratch trace 1, over the octonions. This is described in the normalized state space. Let's just say that. That's why all these trace 1 conditions are in there. So not very many examples, and fairly close to quantum theory. So a good thing to sort of aim for in axiomatic characterizations, and a good thing to try to find operational interpretations of these two properties, homogeneity and self-duality, or implications. Let me just remind you what a Jordan algebra is. It's an abstraction of, that should be xy plus yx, of the properties of the symmetrized product of Hermitian matrices, actually, if we want to look at a real Jordan algebra. And the thing is, this preserves Hermitianness, whereas ordinary multiplication of operators didn't. And I think it was actually invented in order to abstract some properties of quantum mechanics in the 30s. It's formally real if a sum of squares being zero implies the squares are zero. And you've got to, that's just right for the squares to be a pointed convex cone. Otherwise, if you've got two squares that add to zero but they're not zero, there's a whole subspace in there. There's no point. The cone is not pointed. You try to look at a base, it won't be compact. It's a disaster for interpreting probabilistically. Okay. In finite dimensions, this is the same thing as Euclidean, which means there's this associative inner product. Interesting note, all Jordan state spaces have this transitivity of the compact connected automorphism group on pure states. It's this property that's been discussed a lot, particularly yesterday. Transitivity of reversible operations. Okay. By the way, is there a clock somewhere or a watch I can borrow or something? If I borrow your watch, that puts me in a good position, Marcus. But I won't abuse it, I promise. A glass of water would be nice as well. Yeah. And if you have any single malt to dump in there, that'd be excellent. Okay, so... all right. It turns out there's a weaker notion of self-duality, which we call weakly self-dual. And that's just if there's an order isomorphism, in other words, a positive invertible map, from the dual cone to the primal cone. And the way I've written it here, this is going from the primal to the dual. I didn't say which way it went. So it induces a non-singular bilinear form. Namely, the B of xy is just turn x into a functional and then evaluate it on y. But it's not obviously even a symmetric form in general. Only if it's positive semi-definite does it induce an inner product. And that, of course, means the cone is self-dual, literally strongly self-dual. And if you want an example of properly weakly self-dual cone, take the PR bit cone with a square base. Okay. A composite. Thank you. Right. So a composite of models is a model whose underlying vector space contains the tensor product of the individual system spaces. But it could be bigger, in which case we don't have this property called local tomography, if it's bigger. All the product states are in the state cone of the composite. All the product effects are in the effect cone of the composite. And the unit is just the tensor product of the units. Okay, locally tomographic if this is actually equal here. So we have no degrees of freedom that aren't describable by the statistics of local measurements, where you include correlations, of course. Okay, examples of this maximal and minimal tensor product, I think they've already been covered. Right, okay. There's a conditioning map. Very natural. We define a map of mega hat associated with any state on AB. And it is just, it goes from A dual to B. And it's just partial evaluation. It's the state on B conditional on measurement result A on state A, if you like. I mean, you plug in one effect here, and you're left with something that takes effects to numbers. That's a state. It's the conditional state. Okay, so you sometimes write it omega F or omega hat of F. I see I forgot the slash. Okay, if it's an order isomorphism, we call it an isomorphism state. And my feeling is that those are very important types of states. See some of the reasons. Okay, a little lemma. This is if you have a bipartite effect on AB, state on BC, and you have some state alpha in A, then if you tensor up this state in A with this bipartite state of BC, and you evaluate, you do a measurement on BC, tensor up the state on BC with this sort of input state in alpha, and you do a measurement on AB, this tells you what state comes out at C. So this is like a teleportation type style protocol, except that I didn't say anything about whether this is teleportation. All right. So now we'll get to ensemble steering. Here's the quant pH reference. I think now it's called Ensemble Steering, Weak Self-Duality in the Structure of Quantum Theory. So with Alex and a student from Susquehanna. I mean, I don't think he's there anymore. Okay, so here's a fact. We take any state and any measurement on the A system, it's a bipartite state, then the conditional states, omega hat of F sub I, which are B states, are an ensemble for the marginal states, trivial fact. Let's say that a state is steering for its marginal if for every ensemble on B, there is a measurement F sub I such that the state's conditional on F sub I, I think that should be F sub I, that is omega sub I. So, the ith state in the ensemble is the state conditional on the ith measurement outcome. And I've written this so ensembles are of unnormalized states where the norm encodes the probability. Interesting things about steering, it defeats BB84 style bit commitment, which, of course, Bennett and Broussard knew in 84 how to defeat in the quantum case with entangled states. And put that in the paper. And this defeats it in the same way by Alice preparing a... So if you try to do a bit commitment protocol based on the non-uniqueness of the B marginals decomposition, some state omega B decomposition to pure states, where Alice is supposed to, later reveal which ensemble she prepared, and then Bob's supposed to check that. With these steering states, Alice can just do an entangled state and prepare any marginal. So it's basically the standard thing works. So that's one motivation to be interested in steering. I mentioned isomorphism states before. It's a fairly trivial thing to see that they're steering. Okay, isomorphisms onto faces are steering as well, but I don't think I'll go into that. Okay, maybe we're getting to the interesting results here. So these are equivalent. A being homogeneous And every normalized state in the interior of A, being the marginal of an isomorphism state, this just means that it's a legitimate state, right? That at least it's positive on product effects. Where B is any fixed state space isomorphic to A's dual. So a corollary of this is that the following are equivalent. If A is weakly self-dual and homogeneous, then every normalized state in the interior of A is the marginal of an isomorphism state in this maximal tensor product. And that means that you could at least conceive of constructing a tensor product. I mean, you can construct a tensor product that contains all these states, and so it steers everything in A. So there's a connection between weak self-duality, homogeneity, and steering. Okay, we were also interested in the relation of this to purification. In other words, to the notion that every state of a theory should have a pure state on a larger system of which it's the marginal. And so in order to study that, we showed that for irreducible systems, and let me just quickly say what those are. It's a pretty trivial concept. We say that a system is irreducible. Well, let's say a system is reducible if its state cone is just, you know, the Cartesian product of a couple of state cones, you know, which gets represented in the vector space where the states live as just, you know, there's some space A1 and some space A2, and A1 is in here and A2 is in there. So basically, they're like two super selection sectors, right? There's no coherence ever between them, and the information about which place the state is in is basically classical information. So, you know, if you just study irreducible systems, you're pretty safe, because it's usually relatively easy to then extend results to these sums, these classical sums of different systems. So let's look at irreducible systems. In those systems, right, so automorphisms of the cone are pure, they're extremal, in the regular cone of positive maps A from A to itself. And of course, what I mean by extremal is they are on extremal rays, right? Because as a convex set, a pointed cone only has one extremal point, which is zero, which is not very interesting. But if you think about multiples of normalized pure states, that's what I mean by extremal points in the cone. So don't be confused. Okay, so order automorphisms are extremal. And so isomorphism states are pure in any, at least locally tomographic, composite state space. So we've got isomorphism states, you know, at least capable of steering, and we've also got them related to purity. Right. Now, of course, this doesn't extend to reducible systems, like a classical system, for example, is just a sum of one-dimensional cones. It's reducible into sort of trivial cones. Because any classical bipartite state with perfect correlation between its marginals is steering for both its marginals. Even for irreducible, steering doesn't imply pure, right? There are mixed states that steer a marginal. Now, for an irreducible system, if this conditionalization map is actually injective and steering for its marginal, then that's a pure state. But it would be nice to actually, you know, characterize, you know, have a better way of deriving, you know, a way of actually deriving purity in terms of the concept of steering. And so an open question is, if a state is bi-steering, which means steering for both of its marginals, so, you know, Alice can steer Bob's stuff and Bob can steer Alice's stuff, is it pure? We don't yet know the answer. Okay, and I think I'll skip the more technical stuff there. Right, we have a necessary and sufficient condition for steering that's in the paper. I think it's relatively technical, so I'll skip that. So here's what we've concluded about steering homogeneity and weak self-duality. We say a theory has universal steering if for every system B and state in B, there's some system and some state of that system, bipartite state of that system, tensored with B, that allows you to steer this state beta. We say there's uniform universal steering, the emphasis is on uniformity, if for each B you can use the same system to steer every state in B. And universal self-steering if you can actually use A to steer itself. Okay, and then universal uniform steering implies that every irreducible finite dimensional state space in the theory is homogeneous. Universal self-steering implies that every irreducible finite dimensional state space is homogeneous and weakly self-dual. Okay, so we're fairly close to Jordan algebraic systems, but the differences between weak and strong self-duality, and that's an interesting thing to investigate more. I may be running ahead of time. So let me say now a bit about the second topic, the second main topic, which is composites of Jordan algebraic systems. So Alex mentioned earlier this result of Hantzsch Olson, where he said any Jordan-Banach algebra, and in finite dimensions that's exactly the same thing as these Euclidean or formerly real Jordan algebras, whose vector space tensor product with the two-dimensional self-adjoint, in other words, Hermitian matrices, can be equipped with a Jordan product that satisfies this equation. So if you just Jordan multiply something, tensor the Jordan unit here, with a tensor product, that's the same as just multiplying it on this side. And similarly, you know, on the right. Right-hand tensor factor. Okay, so if that holds, which seems a very natural property, you know, it's sort of you've got a commutative, you've got kind of a commuting action of left of multiplication. On the left factor and the right factor, then you actually have the self-adjoint part of a complex C star algebra. Complex is just a some authors allow real C-star algebras. So, in other words, basically it's quantum mechanics. You know, maybe with some super selection rules, right? Maybe direct sum of a bunch of quantum state spaces, but not in any serious sense, you know, differing from standard quantum mechanics. Just combinations of classicality and quantumness. Okay, so we use this to show, you know, what probably is not very surprising, but it actually took some work. Probably wouldn't have taken Hantzsch Olson as much work. But if a homogeneous self-dual state space has a locally tomographic homogeneous self-dual composite with a qubit state space, and if the product of local elements of the connected part of the automorphism group is an automorphism of the composite, then it's the state space of a C-star algebra. And, you know, this is a fairly natural condition. In particular, I think if you wanted a category of these state spaces, and, you know, you made the reasonable requirement. So, by the way, I'm implicitly always considering theories that are saturated, in other words, where you use the full effect cone. So with that mentioned, in a category theoretic situation where you want to have a so-called monoidal product, if you are actually requiring that the automorphism group be actual morphisms in the category, the physical operations, or at least All right, I was going to say I think you can get away with the reversible part of the automorphism group, but since I didn't write it down, let me not commit to that. So if you want automorphisms, or at least the connected identity component of the automorphism group, to actually act on the system, then the category theoretic requirements for a product are going to force you to have their products acting on the composite. So it's a very reasonable condition, I think. And let me just point out that in quantum theory, restricting to the connected part of the automorphism group isn't too bad, because the thing that takes you into the non-connected component is the transpose. And we really don't want that around anyway if you want standard quantum theory. You all know why. So let me say a little bit about how we proved this. And the proof is right out of the oven. So, like a souffle, there's always the possibility that it could collapse. But I think we've reflated it enough times that it probably won't. So in order to do this proof, we had to explore an interesting and maybe not so obvious concept, which in fact was sort of a hidden, not having dealt with it was sort of a hidden bug. So let's define a composite of self-dual systems to be unitarily monoidally self-dual if we can choose self-dualizing inner products for the factors and the composite. We'll choose them. Okay, and they're going to be, let's furthermore choose them to be invariant under the reversible transformations of the theories of the three state spaces, right? The compact, connected, maximal connected, compact subgroups of the automorphism group. That's the reversible transformations. And we want them, in fact, to be the particular compact subgroups that fix the order units. Okay, we want the self-dualizing inner product on AB to be a product of the self-dualizing inner products on A and the inner product on B. And this almost seems like something that has to be true, right, operationally. Like, if it weren't true, then maybe products of product effects, product effects evaluated in product states wouldn't give you products of probabilities, and that's bad. As far as you can tell, that last thing actually doesn't follow. We have no proof that in general this, this has to hold, that you can at least choose the inner products on all three systems to be self-dualizing and have this property, even if all three are self-dual. So we have this perhaps non-trivial property. And we had to actually establish that for locally tomographic composites, the property does hold. So that's this proposition that we used in the proof. Now, I just want to note, if we have a monoidal category of such systems, which I hope Bob talked about in the morning, then self-dualizing inner products actually induce a dagger, right? This contravariant identity on objects functor. So for every map, there's a map going backwards from the target system. And this condition actually follows from the monoidality of the dagger, right? And the way you get this backwards functor is basically using the adjoint that's always around in linear spaces, right? Which takes, a map from A to B. The adjoint map goes B star to A. But then you have this isomorphism between spaces and your dual spaces, so you can pull it back into the primal spaces, and now it's going back with the primal spaces. So that's how this inner product, by giving you this isomorphism between state spaces and their duals, that's how it gives you this dagger. Monoidality of the dagger basically says the dagger on a tensor product of things is the product of the daggers. I mean, roughly speaking, we're really talking about the components of a functor on these systems. So it actually implies this condition. But on the other hand, this is, just kind of another sort of abstract abstractly natural, but you want to motivate it operationally on condition. Okay, but if we have local tomography, we're okay. And basically the way this works, we've got these three invariant inner products. We know they're fixed only up to constants on irreducible representations. The irreducible representations occurring in our real representations of these compact automorphism groups that act on these real state spaces are of real type, right? So they're not only on a real vector space, but they're of real type. And what does that mean? It means that the commutant of these irreps is isomorphic to the reals, not to the complex numbers or to the quaternions, right? So with complex, Schur's lemma tells you that the commutant is the scalars of an irrep, but on, you know, the Schur's lemma that applies to real systems allows these three possibilities. But we're in this possibility, basically because these are subgroups of, they're orthogonal matrices with respect to this inner product. And so we can distribute sums of irreps of the factor groups over our tensor. And we know that this joint tensor product has to be invariant under the product group. So we can use the irreps of this product group, you know, to say, well, this thing has to be, you know, determined up to constants on that. And it turns out that we have enough freedom from the constants on the factors to choose our product tensor products to so that they multiply to give you whatever tensor product you assumed, sorry, whatever inner product you assumed here. That's a sketch of how that goes. All right. So I'm going to end with something extremely speculative. I mean, I may actually go a little further with some even more speculative stuff that isn't even on the slides, but this last slide is extremely speculative. So I was talking at the beginning about how, you know, when the mathematics turns up some notion that maybe you weren't expecting, you know, it might give you some interesting operational idea. So here's a speculation about what might be the operational idea behind this notion of monoidality or non-monoidality of this self-dualizing inner product. You know, so I don't actually know of any example that is self-dual but not monoidally so, but I have reason to think they might exist. You know, based on some papers I've read. I'll mention the paper. Okay, so here's the speculative motivation. Homogeneous self-dual cones are so-called Riemannian symmetric spaces. So that's a manifold, you know, that's got certain properties. There's some global automorphism of the manifold that it's an isometry, so differential manifold, it's an isometry, but it reverses the geodesics at some point. All the geodesics that go through some particular point. For any point, you can do this, because it's homogeneous. Okay, so that's a symmetric space. I don't know what the operational interpretation of that is, other than that if it's a cone, it's self-dual. Okay. The geodesics are related to the linear operators representing Jordan multiplication. For example, the linear operator of multiplication by x generates a geodesic between the order unit and x. Okay. Now, a result of Satake on linearly embedding homogeneous self-dual cones, you know, one into another, implies, I say probably implies, but it looks like it's going to work out, that the embeddings of the factors in a composite of homogeneous self-dual cones are what's called totally geodesic. And what that basically means is that the geodesics of the thing you stuck in there, you know, the geodesics go to geodesics. The geodesics of the original thing map, when you put it into the bigger thing, they map to geodesics. And so that's going to fail for this natural Riemannian metric on our homogeneous self-dual cones if we don't have this, you know, self-dualizing product inner product. Okay, but in the quantum case, I think this metric is the so-called Buret's metric on density operators. It's the distinguishability metric. So the distance between two density operators in this metric, two close density operators, let's say, is basically it's the number of states that you have to traverse to get from one to the other where you measure the number, or you measure the distance by distinguishability of these two states at the one sigma level, using the best quantum measurement for distinguishing them. And so there's a paper that some of you may know by Brownstein and Caves on this metric. There's some work by Fuchs and Caves, actually, on distinguishing, you know, finitely separated states that gives you a certain optimal measurement based on a certain criterion. And I actually showed in my PhD thesis, I computed these geodesics of this Pures metric. And an interesting fact about them is that you can use the same measurement everywhere along them. And I think I also discovered a paper by Ullmann where he computed them, although it was a pretty different formalism and the answer looked different, but I think I figured out it was the same. Anyway, that was many years ago, but right, so that's what these geodesics are, and I believe these are actually, you know, the geodesics of this Riemannian metric on the big state space looked at as a symmetric space. Okay, so maybe, I think probably, this generalizes to symmetric, which means symmetric cones are the same as homogeneous self-dual cones, just another jargon. Maybe even just homogeneous cones, right? Because those also have this business that you can get from any interior point to any other interior point. And there's kind of the way you show that, there's a natural path that also involves left multiplication in some even gnarlier algebra. Okay, but that's pretty speculative to think it might work for homogeneous. So here's my guess. The failure of monoidality implies that even product states can be distinguished better in the terms that are used in defining the Bures metric. I mean, there are different distinguishability measurements. And here we're talking about infinitesimal, you know, distinguishing nearby states better by non-product measurements, perhaps. Okay, so that's the wild speculation. All right, so it looks like there's 5 minutes left, which could be used for questions. And maybe I'll just say very quickly one more speculative thing, which is, okay, so we did this thing showing you get quantum mechanics if you have a qubit and you combine it with any of these Jordan algebraic systems if you require local tomography. What if you drop local tomography, right, which is the only place this issue is going to come up anyway? And you might think, well, it kind of makes sense it might come up because you have these global degrees of freedom that are not in the product. They're not correlations. And so, yeah, maybe it is reasonable. They might let you distinguish things better. All right, well, what if you drop that? Can you make composites? So we're pretty sure the answer is yes. And Matthew Graydon and Cosmin Udadek and I are going to be working hard on this over the next couple of weeks to try to get it all written up and details all worked out. But in another paper, Hanche Olsen came up with this thing called the universal tensor product of JC algebras. Right? And JC algebras are Jordan algebras that can be embedded into a C star algebra, so a complex matrix algebra. So the Jordan product is just the natural thing I wrote before. It's just, you know, x, y plus y, x using the ordinary matrix multiplication over 2. And actually, there's only one of these homogeneous self-dual cones whose Jordan algebra is not the is not a JC algebra, and that's the exceptional cone, the 3x3 octonionic matrices. And those nasty guys aren't going to tensor with anything. So, sorry, I should have said those guys are not going to be able to tensor with anything, I'm pretty sure. Right. And so the way this universal tensor product construction works of Hanche Olsen is, well, first you use something called the universal C star algebra of a JC algebra. So we said you can embed them, JC algebras, into C star algebras. Well, this universal C star algebra is one where you embed the thing in there And then you just use standard C-star algebra morphisms to stick it into whatever C-star algebra you want to get to. You can always go through this universal thing, right? That's what a universal property is like, right? When we use tensor products, we're using universal properties, right? Because, I mean, you could call a composite of Q-trits a tensor product. A tensor product of Q-trits, a composite of qubits, right? Because all the product, you know, if you pick your qubits in here, you've got product effects and all that. But it's not minimal. So, when I define universal, I should have said that the factorization is unique. You can go through this thing in a unique way. All right. So, similar thing for the these universal C-star algebras. So, Hodge-Ohlson basically tensors these things up. You know, takes the universal C-star algebras, tensors them up. You've got the Jordan algebras, the factors in each one. Then you look at the Jordan algebra generated by those, just using, you know, the ordinary AB plus BA over 2 guess for your Jordan product, and that is this universal tensor product of Jordan algebras. And then you can show that, you can show that it is universal in a certain sense for Jordan morphisms. So I believe we can get to those, and again, it's perhaps not surprising, get from those I believe those are going to give us the products of homogeneous self-dual cones. With a little trick that we, so Hodge-Ohlson has things set up so that even the transposition is going to factor, and that means, basically it means that you have to have an extra bit with every quantum system so that the transposition can just switch these two sumands. So you'll have to tweak it so that only the inner automorphisms factor. So it'll get you nice things. They won't be tensor product. They won't be locally tomographic. For example, if you take two n-dimensional quaternionic systems, you'll get a 4m n-dimensional real quantum system. So you kind of solve the problem of, well, how do you combine quaternionic systems? That's the natural way to do it. And of course, you can tensor up the ball cones with each other. You never get a ball cone because it would have too many distinguishable states, but you get into these matrix cones. And as I said, for various reasons, you're not going to be able to do it with the exceptional code. So I think we're going to have a full picture there. And I guess I'd like to end with that. Thanks.
Thank you, Howard. So do we have questions? We have time for, say, two short questions.
Just a technical question. When you refer to this, I can't remember the name again, Ocker and then something else theorem, you wrote down two conditions which involved an identity. Well, this morning, Alex said like something which looked like bifunctoriality, and they didn't seem to me equivalent. Is that a reason?
Is this the Kosher-Vinberg theorem?
Yeah. No, the other one. Hodge-Ohlson.
Ah.
You had a completely different condition than
I don't think
a seemingly much weaker. No?
I don't think they're different, but is Alex here? Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, I think you can make, did he have like one equation? Yeah. Yeah, so I think there is a way that we found to write this as one equation.
Okay, more questions? So I'm actually a bit curious about these 3x3 octonionic matrices. Is there any intuition what the state space looks like, or is it some kind of significance that it has operationally?
Well, so I mean, the short answer is that I haven't really studied it. You know, I'm sure various people have. So it's related to what F4, the Lie group F4. If that rings a bell, it doesn't really for me. But I don't know if it has anything to do with E8. It's probably in there somewhere. But yeah, it's curious. I mean, it'd be curious to know. It seems like you can't really do that much with it, but who knows? Maybe in some more general setting where you relax strong self-duality, maybe you can.
So we have time for one more short question. So if there are no more questions, then let's thank Howard again.